Lazarus won't let her go out alone. The twins are her usual bodyguard. As a flesh and blood, she's only 3 years old, and she doesn't shoot as well as the twins do, and she's more trusting than they are. How's your marksmanship? Just fair. I started taking lessons when I made up my mind to migrate, but I haven't had time to practice. Better find time. Not that Lazarus will ride you about it. He feels responsible for our women, not for men. But if you ask for help, well, I did, and so did Ira, he'll coach you in everything from bare hands to improvised weapons, with 2,000 years of dirty tricks thrown in. Up to you, old darling. But here's what it did for me. As you know, I used to be a campus snarky, a scholar poring over old records. I never carried arms. Then I took rejuvenation and became a rejuvenator myself and was even less inclined to go armed. But for 14 years, I've had regular coaching from the all-time champion in how to stay alive. The result? I stand straight and proud. Haven't had to kill anyone yet. Galahad suddenly grinned. But the day is young. I answered soberly. Galahad, that's one reason I agreed to run a silly errand for Madame Arabel, to find out things like that. Very well, I take your advice seriously. But you haven't answered my question. Well, I knew you from long back, and so did Ira, and so did Minerva, though you have trouble believing it. Hamadryad had met you, but did not get to know you until last night. Ishtar knew you only from your chart, but is one of your strongest supporters. But the deciding factor is this. Tamra wants you in our family.
Tamra?
You sound astonished.
I am.
I don't see why. She arranged for someone to relieve her in order to be here last night. She loves you, Justin. Don't you know it?
My brain was fuddled.
Yes, I know it, but Tamra loves everyone.
No, just those who need her love, and she always knows who they are. Incredible empathy. She's going to be a great rejuvenator. In this family, Tamra can have anything she wants, and she happens to want you to stay with us, live with us, join us.
I'll be damned.
Tamra.
Unlikely. If I believed in damnation, I wouldn't believe that anyone picked by Tamra Spurling could be in danger of it. Galahad smiled, a happy expression that was more his charm than was his extraordinary beauty. I tried to remember if he had been that beautiful 100 years back. I am not indifferent to male beauty, but my sensuality is not perfectly balanced. In the presence of a homely female and a beautiful male, I tend to look at the female. So I'll never be an aesthete. I like judgment in matters of beauty. I apologize in advance to any female who finds my primitive attitudes, offensive. But I'll share bed with Galahad in preference to a self-centered female beauty. He's warm and gentle and good company, with a roguish playfulness not unlike that of the twins. The thought ran through my mind that I would like to meet his sister, or mother or daughter, a female version of him in character and personality, as well as in appearance.
Oh, Tamra.
Oh. The above was froth at the top of my mind because I was unable to face at once the implications of Galahad's announcement. He went on. Close your mouth, dear. I was as startled as you are. But even if we hadn't been friends years back on Tamra's motion, I would have voted for you sight unseen, so that I could study you. Tamra never makes a mistake. But were you so mind-ill that you needed that much from her? Or so superhuman that she wanted that much from you? But you are neither, or I failed to see it. You aren't ill, I think, other than a touch of wild goose fever. You may be a superman, but none of us found it out last night. If you are a super stud, you restrained yourself. Hamadryad did say at breakfast that a woman is happy in your arms, but she did not imply that you are the galaxy's greatest lover. Being one of Minerva's parents is in your favor. None of them has any serious shortcomings.
Ishtar made sure of that. Oh, Ishtar knows more about you than you do yourself. She can read a gene chart the way other people read print. And Minerva herself is proof that no mistakes were made. I mean, look at Minerva. Sweet as the morning breeze, and as beautiful as Hamadryad in her own fashion, and with an intelligence level so high you wouldn't believe it. Yet so modest. She's almost humble. But still, it's Tamra. Your fate was settled before you reached this house. Slow ride home, wasn't it? Well, one doesn't expect speed from a null boat. Though I was surprised to find one in a young colony. I expected mule-drawn wagons. Lots of those, too. But Lazarus says that this time he traveled with 7 elephants. We fetched a mammoth amount of equipment. That's an overpowered null boat, rebuilt to Lazarus' specifications. I could have fetched you here in a fifth the time it did. But I will let Lazarus know that he wanted time to make some calls. So Lazarus probably told whichever twin was in charge, or signaled her somehow. He was almost telepathic with them, to give you a long, slow ride. Which you got, and I bet that Laz and Lore never changed expression. They didn't. We're sure of it. They are not children. We should see them handle a spaceship. Anyhow, Ira talked to Ishtar, then to Tamra. Then we held a family conference and settled your fate. Lazarus confirmed it while you played with the twins, who were given a chance to veto it later. But they ratified it at once. They not only like you, but Aunt Tanny's wishes are law. I was still bemused. Apparently much went on that I didn't suspect. You weren't supposed to. A better cook would have stayed to get your breakfast, had I not been deputized to tell you, old friends and all that, and to answer questions. I'm confused about that conference. I thought Tamra got home just before dinner. She did. Oh, Athene, are you listening, dear? Uncle Cuddly, you know I don't listen to private conversations. The hell you don't. It'll be all right, Justin. Tina keeps secrets. Tell him how to call someone, Tina. Tell me to whom you wish to speak, Justin. I have radio links to every farm, or anywhere, and I can always reach Ira and Lazarus. Thank you, Tina. Now, if you must listen, pretend not to. The conference here, Justin. Tina fetched in Tamra's voice and Ira's. Could have fetched voices from the null boat, but you were the subject. By the way, Tina is one reason this family isn't farming. Instead, we supply services that colonies usually don't have so soon. Oh, you can farm if you want to. We've claimed quite a bit of land. Or there are other ways to make a living. All right, I've done my best. Want to quiz me? Galahad, I think I understand everything, but why Tamra wants me in your family? You'll have to ask her. I told you I was checking for your halo. Can't see it. I don't wear it in hot weather. Obadiah, don't farce around. This is terribly important to me. Why do you keep saying that Tamra's wishes settled it? You know her, man. I know how important her wishes are to me, but I've been in love with her for many years. I told him things I had long kept to myself. So, that's the way it went. A great Hatira never proposes a contract, and usually won't listen if a man is bold enough to propose one himself. But I made a nuisance of myself. Tamra finally convinced me that she married only to have children and did not intend to have more. I feel sure that money was not a factor. It wouldn't be. Oh, I don't mean that Tamra is silly that way. I've heard her say that since money is the universal symbol for value received, one should accept it proudly. But Tamra won't marry for money. She wouldn't feel that, or perhaps she would. I think I'll ask her. Interesting. Our Tamra is a complex person. Oh, sorry, dear, I interrupted. I say money was not the controlling factor, as she had suitors with 10 to 100 times my modest wealth, yet she married none of them. So, I shut up and was content to have part of Tamra, spend nights with her when I was permitted to, share her company and happiness circles at other times. pay her as much as I could, as much as she would accept, I mean. She often set her fee by refusing part of a gift. She did with me. I don't know what she did with wealthy clients. Years and years of that. Then she announced that she was retiring. I was stunned. I had taken rejuvenation during this time, but hadn't noticed that she was any older. But she was firm about it, and left me Rome. Galahad, it left me impotent. Oh, not incapable, but what had been ecstasy turned out to be mere exercise, not worth the trouble. Has this ever happened to you? No. Perhaps I should say not yet, since I'm still working on my second century. Then you don't know what I mean. Only vicariously. But may I quote something Lazarus once said? He was speaking to Ira, but privacy was not placed on it. You'll come across it in his raw memoirs. Ira, he said, there were many years when I hardly bothered with women. Not only unmarried, but celibate. After all, how much variety can there be in the slippery friction of mucous membranes? Then I realized that there was infinite variety in women as people, and that sex was the most direct route to knowing a woman, a route they like, one that we like, and often the only route that can break down barriers and permit close acquaintance. And in discovering this, I gained renewed interest in the friendly frolic itself. Happy as a lad with his first bare tit warm in his hand. Happier, as never again was I merely a piston to her cylinder. Each woman was a unique individual worth knowing, and if we took time enough, we might find we loved each other. But at least we offered each other pleasure and a haven from cares. We weren't simply masturbating, with the other just a sex doll. That's close to what Lazarus said, Justin. You went through something like that? Yes, somewhat. A long period when sex wasn't worth the trouble. But I got over it. With a woman as fine in her own way as Tamara is, although, I didn't fall in love with her. Was she with me? She taught me something I had forgotten, that sex can be friendly and worthwhile without the intense love I felt for Tamara. You see, a friend of mine, the wife of another friend, and they were both close to me, as a special gift, she introduced me to another Hetaira, a great beauty, and arranged for me a holiday with her, paid for by my friends. Oh, they could afford it. She is wealthy. This beautiful Hetaira, Magdalene. Galahad looked delighted. Maggie? Why, yes, she did use that pillow name. Magdalene was her vocational name, but when she learned that I keep the archive, she told me her registered name. Rebecca Sperling Jones. Then you do know her? All my life, Justin, darling. I nourished at those beautiful breasts. She's my mother, dear. What a delightful coincidence. I was delighted, too, but more interested in something else. So that's where you get your beauty? Yes, but also from my genetic father. Maggie, tells me I look more like him. Really? If you permit, I'll look up your lineage when I get back to Secundus. An archivist should not consult the archives from personal curiosity. I was presuming on friendship to suggest it. Dear, you're not going back to Secundus, but you can get it from Athene clear back to the first push in the bush after Ira Howard's death. But let's talk about Mama. She's a jolly one, isn't she? As well as a beauty. Both. I told you how much she did for me. Your mother assumed that this holiday was going to be fun. Fun for both of us. And it was, indeed. And I forgot about being uninterested in sex. I'm not speaking of technique. I suspect that any high-priced Hetaira in New Rome is as skilled as any famous courtesan in history. I mean her attitude. Maggie is fun to be around. In bed or out. Laugh wrinkles, but no frown wrinkles. Galahad nodded agreement as he wiped egg from his platter. Yes, that's Mama. She gave me a most happy childhood, Justin. So much so that I was grumpy at being shoved out when my 18th rolled. But she was sweet about it. After my adulthood party, she reminded me that she was moving out too, and going back to her profession. Her contract with Papa, my foster father, was a term contract, over when I became a legal adult. So if I wanted to see Maggie again, and I wanted to, it would be cash at the counterpane, no family discount. Since I was a poor but honest research assistant, paid only two or three times what I was worth, I couldn't have afforded 30 seconds with her, much less a night. Mama's fees were always sky high. Galahad looked thoughtfully happy. Goodness, that seems long ago. More than a century and a half, Justin. I didn't realize that Magdalene was being both wise and kind. I was grown up only legally and physically, and if she hadn't cut the cord, I would have hung around, an overgrown infant, cluttering her life and interfering with her vocation. So I did grow up. And when I married, my first wife named our first daughter Magdalene and asked Maggie to be godmother. Then I could hardly believe that this beautiful creature had borne me, and I had no special urge to play Oedipus to her regal beauty. I was too much in love with my wife. Yes, Maggie is a fine girl, although she spoiled me as a kid. Was that holiday the only time you had her? No. But not often. As you say, she was expensive. She offered me a 50% discount. Well, you did impress her. She knew I wasn't wealthy. But even at that, I couldn't afford her company often. But she got me over my emotional hump, and I'm grateful to her. A fine woman, Galahad. You have reason to be proud of her. I think so. But, Justin, dear, your mention of that discount makes me certain that she remembers you just as fondly. Oh, I hardly think so. Years back, Galahad. Don't trip in your modesty, dear. Maggie grabbed every crown the traffic would bear. But the delightful coincidence is more than just the fact that you've had my mother. After all, high as her fees were, New Rome has many wealthy men attractive enough that Maggie would accept them. The delightful aspect is that, this very minute, she is about 40 kilometers south of here.
No!
CCC, ask Athena the caller. You can be talking with her in 30 seconds.
I still don't think she would remember me.
I do, but there's no rush. If you are surprised, think how surprised I was. I had nothing to do with the migrants' roster. I was ass deep in getting together what Ishtar had ordered for the clinics. Justin, I didn't know Maggie had married again. So, we're here a couple of weeks, the headquarters party, with a temporary setup and still eating and sleeping in the Dora, on the first transport grounds. Then we're busy getting people and supplies out, in a sequence worked out by Lazarus and bossed by Ira. My assignment, once I had my shack up, by hand, Athene had no outside extensionals then, poor Uncle Cuddly. Who doesn't listen to private conversations? I have to keep you straight, dear. It was Minerva who had no outside hands then. I wasn't even hatched. Well, you have her memories, Tina. It's a mere technicality. Not to me, dearie. The cinchy little bitch took some memories with her that she didn't want to share with her ever-loving twin. And she locked one whole bank that she did leave behind so that I can't touch it without an abracadabra, either from her or from Grandpappy. Except that you can unlock it, Justin, if both my twin and Lazarus are dead. I managed to answer quickly. In that case, Athene, I hope that it is a very long time before I am able to trigger it. Well, when you put it that way, so do I. But I can't help wondering what grim secrets and unspeakable crimes are locked in my Theta 97B Dexter, a leaf prime. Will the stars tremble in the courses? But Uncle Cuddly did work hard a couple of days, Justin. Probably the only honest work he has ever done. I disdain to comment, Tina. Justin, my assignment was examining physician, for which I was qualified under an almost new diploma. So Ishtar and Hamadryad are unpacking migrants and giving them their antidotes, and I'm checking them to make sure they've made the trip safely, rushing it as I haven't yet snatched another medical doctor from that parade of flesh. I glance up from my machine just long enough to note the next victim is female, and call out over my shoulder, "Strip down, please, and change the setting." Then I look twice and say, "Hello, Mama. How did you get here?" This caused her to give me a second look. Then she smiled a big, happy smile and said, "I flew in on a broom, Obadiah. Give me a kiss and tell me where to put my clothes. Is the doctor around?" Justin, I let the queue pile up while I gave Maggie a thorough examination. Proper, as she was pregnant, and I made certain that her unborn baby had come through all right. But also to gossip and get caught up. Married again, 4 children by today, a farm wife with a sunburned nose and happy as can be. Got married quite romantically. Mama heard the advertising about opening a virgin planet. Went to the recruiting office Ira had in the Harriman Trust Building to find out about it. That astonished me the most. Mama is the last person I would have suspected of yearnings to pioneer. Well, I agree, Galahad. But I don't suppose anyone would pick me as a likely pioneer either. Perhaps not. Nor me. But Maggie puts in her application at once and runs into one of her wealthy regulars doing the same. They go somewhere for a bite and discuss it, and leave the restaurant and register an open-end contract, and go back to the recruiting office and withdraw their solo applications and submit a joint one as a married couple. I won't say that got them accepted, but almost no singles were accepted for first wave. Did they know that? Oh, certainly. The recruiting clerk warned them before accepting their solo fees. That's what they left to discuss. They already knew they suited each other in bed, but Maggie wanted to find out if he intended to farm. Believe it or not, that's what she wanted. And he wanted to know if she could cook, and was she willing to have kids. And it was, "Fine, we agree, let's get on with it." Maggie had her fertility restored, and they planted their first baby without waiting to see if they were accepted. I said, "That probably clenched it." "You think so? Why?" "If they changed their application to show that Magdalene had caught. If Lazarus passed on the applications. Galahad, our ancestor, favors people who take big bites." Yes. Justin, why are you hanging back?"
I'm not. I had to be certain that the invitation was serious. I still don't know why, but I'm no fool. I'm staying."
"Wonderful!"
Galahad jumped up, came around the table, kissed me again, ruffed my hair and hugged me.
"I'm happy for all of this, darling, and we'll try to make you happy."
He grinned, and I suddenly saw his mother in him. Hard to imagine the glamorous Magdalene with kids and calluses, a frontier farm wife, but I recalled the old proverb about best wives. Galahad went on, "The twins weren't sure I could be trusted with so delicate a mission. They were afraid I would muff it." Galahad, there was never a chance I would refuse. I just had to be sure I was welcome. I still don't know why. Oh, we were speaking of Tamra and got sidetracked. Justin, it's not public knowledge how difficult it was to rejuvenate our ancestor this time, although the recordings you have been editing may hint at it.
More than a hint.
But not all of it. He was almost dead, and simply keeping him alive while we rebuilt him was hard enough. But we managed that. You won't find another technician of Ishtar skill. But when we had him in good shape, by our age almost as young as he is now, he took a turn for the worse. What do you do when a client turns his face away, is reluctant to talk, doesn't want to eat, yet has nothing wrong with him physically? Bad. Stays awake all night rather than risk going to sleep? Very bad. When he... Never mind. Ishtar knew what to do. She went up into the mountains and fetched back Tamra. She wasn't rejuvenated then.
That wouldn't matter.
It did matter, Justin.
You would have handicapped Tamra in coping with Lazarus.
Oh, Tamra would have overcome the handicap. I have confidence in her. But her bio-age and appearance were around 80 on the Hardy scale. This made it easier, as Lazarus, despite his renewed body, was feeling the weight of his years. But Tamra looked old, and every white hair was an asset. Lines in her face, little round pot belly, breasts pendulous, varicosities. She looked the way he felt, so he didn't mind having her around during a crisis in which he... Well, I sketched that he couldn't stand the sight of us who looked youthful. That's all it took. She healed him. Yes, she's a healer. How well I knew.
She's a great healer!
That's what she's doing now, healing a young couple who lost their first baby, nursing the mother who had a rough time physically, sleeping with both of them. We all sleep with her. She always knows when we need her. Lazarus needed her then. She felt it, and stayed with him until he was well. Oh, after last night, this may be difficult to believe, but both of them had quit sex. Years and years. Lazarus more than half a century, and Tamra had not coupled with anyone since she retired. Galahad smiled. Here's a case of the patient healing the physician, and bringing Lazarus around to the point where he invited her to share his bed. Tamra herself found new interest in living. She lived with Lazarus long enough to heal his spirit, then announced that she was leaving to apply for rejuvenation. I said, Lazarus asked her to marry him.
I don't think so, Justin.
And neither Tamra nor Lazarus hinted at such. Tamra put it another way entirely. We were all having a late breakfast in the garden of the palace penthouse when Tamra asked Ira if she could join his migration. It was solely Ira's migration then. Lazarus had said repeatedly that he would not join it. I think he already had in mind attempting to time trip. Ira told Tamra to consider it settled and not to worry about restrictions that would be published when he announced it. Justin, Ira would have given her the palace as readily. She had saved Lazarus, and we all knew it. But you know Tamra. She thanked him, but said she intended to qualify fully, starting with rejuvenation. Then she would see what she could learn to be useful in a colony, just as Hamadryad planned to. And Hamadryad, will you sleep with Lazarus tonight? And Justin, you should have heard the commotion that started.
Why a commotion?
I asked. From what you said earlier, Lazarus had reacquired his interest in the friendly sport. Did Hamadryad have some reason not to want to substitute for Tamra?
Oh, Hamadryad was willing, although upset by the way Tamra dumped the matter on her.
Doesn't sound like Tamra. If Hamadryad hadn't wanted to do it, Tamra would have known it without asking.
Justin, when it comes to people's emotions, Tamra always knows what she is doing.
It was Lazarus she was trapping, not Hamadryad. Our ancestor has odd shynesses. Or did have then. He had been sleeping with Tamra for a month and pretending that he was not. As futile as a cat covering up on a tile floor. But Tamra's blandly blunt request that Hamadryad relieve her as his concubine forced it into the open and produced a head-on clash of wills. Lazarus and Tamra. Justin, you know them both. Who won?
The ancient pseudo-paradox. That Tamra could be immovable, I knew.
I won't guess, Galahad.
Neither, just then. Because once Lazarus stopped sputtering about how both he and Hamadryad were being needlessly embarrassed, Tamra gently withdrew her suggestion.
Then shut up.
Shut up on that. Shut up about rejuvenation. Shut up about migrating. Left the next move up to Lazarus, and won the argument by not arguing.
Justin, it is difficult to kick Tamra out of one's bed.
I would find it impossible.
I think Lazarus found it so. What discussions they had in the middle of the night I could not say, but Lazarus learned that she would not leave for rejuvenation until he promised never to sleep alone while she was gone. But she promised in exchange to return to his bed as soon while she was gone. But she promised in exchange to return to his bed as soon as she completed antigeria.
So, one morning, Lazarus announced the detente. Red-faced and almost stuttering. Justin, our ancestor's true age shows more in some of his ancient attitudes about sex than in any other way. I didn't notice that last night, Galahad, and I expected to, having studied his memoirs so closely. Yes, but you saw him last night some 14 years after we set up our family, as it was that morning that did it. Although we did not formalize it until after the twins were born, whereas at this time they were slight bulges at most, believe me, Lazarus found it hard to capitulate, and tried for an escape hole even then. He announced, rather aggressively, that he had promised Tamra not to sleep alone while she was undergoing antigeria. Then said more or less, in these words, "Ira, you told me that professional ladies were to be found in the city. How do I go about finding one who would accept a contract for that length of time?" I have to quote him in English, as he was using euphemisms he ordinarily disdains. What Lazarus didn't know was that Ishtar had programmed us like actors, hypnotized into roles. Perhaps you've noticed that he is responsive to female tears? Isn't everyone? I've noticed. Ira pretended not to know what profession Lazarus meant, which gave him a dry time to burst into tears and flee, whereupon Ishtar stood up and said, "Grandfather, how could you?" And she was dripping tears, too, and chased after Hamadryad. Then it was Tamra's turn to switch on the raindrops and follow the other two, which left us three men together. Ira became very formal and said, "If you will excuse me, sire, I will attempt to find and console my daughter," bowed, turned abruptly, and left. Which left it up to me. Justin, I didn't know what to do. I knew that Ishtar expected difficulty because Tamra had warned her, but I did not expect to be left to juggle it alone. Lazarus said, "Great balls of fire. Son, what did I do now?" Well, I could answer that. I said, "Grandfather, you've hurt Hamadryad's feelings." Then I was carefully unhelpful, refused to speculate why her feelings were hurt, could not guess where she might have gone, unless she had gone home, which I understood was somewhere in the suburbs, declined to act as his intermediary, all to Ishtar's instructions to play dumb, stupid, and useless, and let the women handle it. So, Lazarus had to track Hamadryad down himself, which he did with Minerva's help. Athene said, "This is all news to me, Uncle Cutley. If it is, dear, please forget it." "Oh, I shall," the computer answered, "except that I'm going to save it up and use it about 100 years from now. Justin, if I burst into tears after I'm a flesh and blood, will you track me down and console me?" "Probably, almost certainly." "I'll remember that, lover boy. You're cute." I pretended not to hear, but Galahad said, "Lover boy?" "That's what I said, dear. Sorry, Uncle Cuddly, but you're obsolete. If you hadn't gone to sleep early, you'd know why." I kept quiet while making a mental note for 100 years hence, one that involved Pallas Athene as a flesh and blood and getting her into a helpless position. This side conversation was cut short. Athene notified us that Lazarus was arriving. Galahad waved his arms. "Hey, Pappy, back here." "Coming," Lazarus bussed me in passing. Did so to Galahad as he slid in by him and grabbed what was left of Galahad's second breakfast, a home-baked jam roll, stuffed it into his mouth and said around it, "Well, did he fight the hook?" "Not nearly the way you did with Hamadryad, Pappy. I was telling Justin about that, how the Hamadarling tripped you and thereby set up our family." "My God, what a canard," Lazarus helped himself to Galahad's hot cup. "Justin,
Galahad is a sweet lad, but romantic. I knew exactly what I wanted to accomplish, so I started by raping Hamadryad, and that broke down her resistance, and now she sleeps with anybody, even Galahad. Everything else followed in logical sequence. He added, "You still plan to go back to Secundus?" I answered, "Perhaps I didn't understand what Galahad has been telling me. I thought I was committing myself in joining to..." I stopped. "Lazarus, I don't know what I'm committed to, and I don't know what I'm joining." Lazarus nodded. "One must make allowances for youth, Justin. Galahad doesn't speak clearly as yet." "Thanks, Pappy. Too much. I sold him the deal, now you've got him wondering." "Quiet, son. Let me spell it out, Justin. What you are joining is a family. What you are committed to is the welfare of the children, all of them, not just any that you may sire." He looked at me and waited. I said, "Lazarus, I've raised a number of children." "I know. I don't think I've let one down yet." "Oh, very well. Three that I haven't seen, plus your two, your sisters or adopted daughters, plus others as they come along, correct?" "Yes, but it's not a lifetime commitment. It's not practical for a Howard. This family may outlive us all. I hope so. But an adult can opt out any time and thereby be committed only to kids then on hand, underfoot or in womb. Call it a maximum of 18 years. However, I assume that the rest of the family would prefer to relieve such a person of his or her responsibilities in order to see the back of his neck. I can't envision a happy relationship continuing for years after someone has announced that he wants out. Can you?" "Well, no, but I won't let it worry me." "Of course it might not happen that way. Suppose Ishtar and Galahad decide to set up a separate household." "Now wait one fiddling minute, Pappy. You can't get rid of me that easily. Ish won't have me except as part of the package. I know. I tried to get her to marry me years back. And wanted to take our three youngest with them. We would not stop them, nor would we try to dissuade children who prefer to go with them. All three of them are Galahads." "There he goes again. Pappy, you put Undine into Ish in the soak pool. That's why we named her that. Elf is either yours or Ira's. The Hamadir told me so. And nobody has any doubt about Andrew Jackson. Justin, I'm sterile." Based on statistical probability, both on sperm count and the fact that he keeps so busy at it, but Ishtar reads the gene charts and keeps such matters to herself. We prefer it that way, but it is extremely unlikely that Hamadryad ever said that, or that she has or ever will have a child by Ira. No genetic hazard, Ishtar is certain. And the fact that we have yet to have any defectives in this colony gives me great confidence in Ishtar's skill in reading a gene chart. She screened the first wave, a job that gave her eye strain for months. Nevertheless, Ira has some unease about it and won't even stand close to Hamadryad when she's fertile. An irrational attitude, I understand. As I am cursed with it myself, I remember too well a time in the past when all the Howards had to go on was percentage of mutual ancestry and got defectives all too often. Of course, today a woman with a clean gene chart is better off married to her brother than to a stranger from another planet. But old ghosts die hard. What it amounts to, Justin, is three fathers. Four with you. Three mothers, but four when Minerva asks to have her adolescence protection canceled. An ever-changing number of kids to be taught and spanked and loved, plus always the possibility of the number of parents being either enhanced or diminished. But this is my house, in my name, and I've kept it that way because I planned it to house one family. Not to make life jolly for goats such as Galahad. But it does, thank you, Pappy darling. But for the welfare of children, I've seen catastrophe strike colonies that looked as safe as this one. Justin, a disaster could wipe out all but one mother and father in this family, and our kids would still grow up normally and happily. This is the only long-run purpose of a family. We think our setup ensures that purpose more than a one-couple family can. When you join, you commit yourself to that purpose. That's all. I took a deep breath. Where do I sign? I see no use in written marriage contracts. They can't be enforced. Whereas if the partners want to make it work, no written instrument is necessary. If you seriously want to join us, a nod of your head is enough. I do. Or if you want ritual, Laz and Laura would be delighted to dream up a fancy one, and we can all have a crying jag together. And on his wedding night, Justin gets to sleep with the babies, so he'll know how serious it is. Seal it, Galahad. If you want to add that touch, you should make it the night before, so he'll have a fair chance to back out if he can't take it. Lazarus, I volunteer for the diaper watch tonight. I'm hardened to such things. I doubt if the women will let you. And you won't live till morning, Galahad added. They're an emotional lot. Last night you had it easy. Better take the pee watch. Galahad could be right. I should check your heart. As may be, keep quiet, Galahad. Justin, this household is not a jail. The setup is not only safer for children, it is more flexible for adults. When I asked you whether you intended to go back to Secundus, I meant simply that. An adult can be away for a year, 10 years, any length of time for any purpose, and know that the kids are taken care of, and know that he, she will be welcome back. The twins and I have been off planet several times, and will be again. And, well, you know I intend to attempt this time-tripping experiment. That won't involve much elapsed time in this framework, but it does involve a slight element of risk. Slight, meaning that Pappy is out of his silly head. Be sure to kiss him goodbye when he leaves, Justin. He won't be back. I was alarmed to see that Galahad was not joking, Lazarus said quietly. Galahad, it is all right to say that to me, but don't say it in front of the women or children. He went on to me. Of course, there is an element of a risk. There isn't anything. But not to a time trip itself, as Galahad seems to think. Galahad shuddered. The risk is the same as visiting any planet. Someone there may not like you. But the time jump takes place in the safest possible surroundings, in space with a ship around you. Any risk comes later. Lazarus grinned. That's why I was so riled at that old cow Arabelle telling you to go look-see at battles. Justin, the best thing about modern times is that we are all so spread apart that war is no longer practical. But did I tell you what I'm going to use as a practice run? No, and I had the impression from Madam Chairman Pro Tem that you already had a perfected technique. It's possible that I let her think so, but Arabelle wouldn't know an imperial number from an imperial edict. She couldn't ask the right questions. I don't think I could either, Lazarus. It's not my field of mathematics. If you're interested, Dora can teach you. Or me, lover boy. Or Tina. What's the idea of calling Justin lover boy, Tina? Are you trying to seduce him? No, he's promised to seduce me about 100 years from now. Lazarus looked at me thoughtfully. I tried to look as if I hadn't heard that exchange. Maybe you'd better take those lessons from Dora, Justin. You haven't met Dora, but I think of her as about 8 years old. She won't try to seduce you, but she's the brightest computer pilot in space and can teach you more than you want to know about Libby field transformations. I was saying that we felt sure of the theory, but I wanted a separate opinion, so I thought of asking Mary Sperling. I said, hold it a moment. Lazarus, in all the archives there is, I am certain only one Mary Sperling. I'm descended from her. Tamra is descended from her. Lots of Howards descended from her, son. Mary had over 30 children, quite a record for those days. Then you do mean Elder Mary Sperling, born in 1953, Gregorian, died and... She did not die, Justin, that's the point. So I went back there and talked with her. My head felt fuzzy. Lazarus, I'm confused. Are you telling me that you've already made one time trip? Nearly 2,000 years? No, I mean over 2,000 years. Justin, if you'll keep quiet, I'll tell you what I mean. Sorry, sir. Call me sir, and I'll get the twins to tickle you. I mean I went, in present time, to star PK-3720-10s to tickle you. I mean I went, in present time, to star PK-3722 and the planet of the little people. That designation is obsolete, and the new catalogings don't hook it in with that planet because Libby and I decided to toss in a joker. We felt that it was a place for humans to stay away from. But the little people are the source of the concepts that Andy Libby worked out as field theory that anyone can use, and all space pilots, computer and human, do use. But I had never gone back there because, well, Mary and I had been close. So close that it was a blow to me when she went over. More disturbing than a death, some ways. But the years do mellow a memory, and I did want to consult. So the twins and I set out in the Dora to try to find that planet from a set of coordinates and a ballistic Andy had assigned a long time back. The ballistic was slightly off, but the star doesn't move far in only 2,000 years. We found it. No trouble, then. I had warned Lore and Laz most solemnly of the subtle danger of the place. They'd listened, and that made them as immune to the place as I am, not tempted to swap their individual personalities for a pseudo-immortality. In fact, they had a wonderful time. The place is charming and safe in all other ways. Hadn't changed much. One huge park. I orbited first. It's their planet, and they have powers we don't kin. Same as last time. A doppelganger of a little person showed up in the door and invited us down to visit. Only this time it called me by name, in my head. They don't use oral speech, and admitted to being Mary Sperling. That shook me, but it was good news. It seemed mildly pleased to see me, but not especially interested. It was not like meeting a beloved old friend, but more like meeting a stranger who nevertheless remembered what that old friend remembered. I understand it, the computer said. Something like Minerva in me, huh? Yes, dear, except that you had a more positive personality your first day than this creature who used the name of my old friend. And you've been getting positiver and positiver for the past 3 years. Oh, buddy boy, I'll bet you tell that to all the girls. Could be. Please keep quiet, dear. Nothing more to tell, Justin, save that we grounded and stayed a few days, and Dora and I consulted with the little people about space-time field theory, while the twins listened and enjoyed playing tourist. But, Justin, when the families left there, returning to Earth in the new frontiers, you will recall that we left some 10,000 behind. 11,183, I answered, according to log of the new frontiers. Is that what we logged? Should have been more, maybe. As the logged figure was reconstructed by seeing who couldn't be mustered, so almost certainly there were unregistered children among those who elected to stay behind. We were there quite a piece. But the exact number doesn't matter. Justin, call it an even 10,000. Given a favorable environment, how many would you expect to find there after 2,000 years? I use the arbitrary expansion. Oh, approximately 10 to the 22nd, which is ridiculous. I would expect either a stabilized Optimax, call it 10 to the 10th, or a Malthusian catastrophe in not over 7 to 8 centuries. Justin, there were none, nor any sign that men had ever been there. What happened to them? What happened to Neanderthal man? What happens to any champion when he's defeated? Justin, what's the point in striving when you're so outclassed that it's no contest? The little people have the perfect utopia. No strife, no competition, no population problem, no poverty, perfect harmony with their beautiful planet. Paradise, Justin. The little people are all the things that philosophers and religious leaders throughout history have been urging the human race to become. Maybe they are perfect, Justin. Maybe they are what the human race can become in another 1,000,000 years, or 10,000,000. But when I say that their utopia frightens me, that I think it is deadly to human beings, and that they themselves look like a dead end to me, I am not running them down. Oh, no. They know far more about mathematics and science than I do. Why, I wouldn't have gone there to consult them. I can't imagine fighting them, because it wouldn't be a fight. They would already have won against anything we could attempt. If we became obnoxious to them, I can't guess what would happen, and I don't want to find out. But I don't see any danger as long as we leave them alone, as we don't have anything they want. So it appears to me. But what's the opinion of one old Neanderthal? I understand them as little as that kitten over there understands astrogation. I don't know what happened to the Howard to stay behind. Some may have gone over and been assimilated, as Mary Sperling did. I didn't ask. I didn't want to know. Some may have lapsed into lotus-eaters' apathy and died. I doubt if many reproduced, although it is possible that there were subhumans around being kept as pets. If so, I most especially did not want to know it. I got what I wanted, a corroborating opinion on a mathematical oddity in field physics, then gathered up my girls and left. We did one thing before we left that neighborhood. We made a ball of twine photographic survey of their planet, then had Athene examine it when we got back. Tina? Sure, buddy boy. Justin, if there is a human artifact on the surface of that planet, it is less than a half meter in diameter. So I assume that they are all dead, Lazarus said grimly, and I shan't go back. No, the trip to PK-3722 was not a trial run time trip, but just a common star hop. The test run will be about as simple and quite safe, as it will not involve putting down on a planet. Want to come along, or shall we take Galahad? Pappy, Galahad said earnestly, I am young, beautiful, healthy, and happy, and plan to stay that way. You are not volunteering me for any such harebrained junket. I'm not making any more star hops of any sort. I'm the hum-loving type. I made one landing with hot pilot Lorelei at the overrides. That's enough, I'm convinced. Now, boy, be reasonable, Lazarus said gently. When we do this, my girls will be old enough to want active male attention, which I am not going to supply. I would lose all control over them. Think of it as your duty. When you start talking about duty, I break out with hives. The trouble is, Pappy, you're a sissy, afraid of two little girls. Could be, because they won't be little girls much longer. Justin? I thought furiously. To be invited by the senior to take a star trip with him is not an honor to turn down. That it included an attempt to travel in time did not bother me. The idea seemed unreal. But it couldn't be dangerous, or he wouldn't be taking his sister daughters along. And besides, I felt that Lazarus was unkillable. A passenger with him should be safe. Gigolo for his girls. Lazarus was farcing Galahad, I was sure, as I was certain that Lazzie and Lori would settle such matters to suit themselves. Lazarus, I will go anywhere you ask me to go. Hold it, objected Galahad. Pappy, Tamara isn't going to like this. No trouble, son. Tamara is welcome, and I think she would enjoy it. She's not chicken like some people we won't mention. What? Galahad sat up straight. Take away Tamara and Justin and our twins and you yourself, half the family, and leave the rest of us here to mourn? Galahad took a deep breath, sighed it out. All right, I give up. I volunteer. But leave Justin and Tamara at home, and the twins. We can't risk them. You pilot, I'll cook. As long as we last, that is. Galahad shows unexpected streaks of nobility, Lazarus said to no one in particular. It'll get him killed yet. Forget it, son. I don't need a cook. Dora is a better cook than either of us. The twins will insist on going, and I need to supervise them through a couple of time jumps. Later they will have to do it alone. Lazarus turned to me. Justin, while you are welcome, it will be a dull trip. You would know you'd traveled in time only because I'd tell you so. I have in mind going to a planet easy to find because Livy and I surveyed it, and he determined its ballistic accurately. I'm not planning to land. It's a moderately dangerous place, but it happens to be a planet I can use as a clock. This may sound silly, but it is hard to be sure of the date in space, other than by your inboard clocks. In particular, the radioactive decay clocks of your computer. Telling time by examining celestial bodies is difficult and involves subtle measurements and long calculation. It is more practical to ground on a civilized planet and bang on somebody's door and ask. There are exceptions. Any stellar system with known ephemerides of its planets, such as here, or Secundus's star, or the solar system and others. If Dora has such data in her gizzards, she can look at such a system and read the time by its planets as if they were hands on a clock. Libby did that with the solar system from the New Frontiers. But on this trial trip, I'll be calibrating a time travel clock. Another matter, and new. I left something in orbit around that planet on a known date. Later I could not find it, despite having equipped it so that I certainly should have found it. It was Andy Libby's coffin. Very well, I'll go look again, trying to split two known dates. If I find it, I will have begun calibration of a time travel clock, as well as proving that the time trip theory is correct. Follow me? I think so, I admitted, to the extent of seeing that it is an experimental proof. But field theory is so far from my own specialty that I can't say more. No need to. I don't understand it too well myself. The first computer designed to manage Libby Sheffield Drive was a reflection of Andy's unique mind. All synths are refinements. If a pilot tells you he understands it and uses a computer simply because it's faster, don't ride with him. He's a phony. Eh, Tina? I understand astrogation, said the computer. Because Minerva replicated Dora's astrogation circuitry and programming in me. But I do not think that it is possible to discuss it in English, or even Galacta, or any language using word elements. I can print out the basic equations and thereby show a static picture, a slice, of a dynamic process. Shall I do so? Don't bother, said Lazarus. Heavens, no, I echoed. Thank you, Athene, but I have no ambition to be a star pilot. Galahad, said Lazarus, how about rousing your lazy carcass and finding a little snack for lunch? Say about 4,000 calories each. Justin, I asked if you plan to go back to Secundus, because I don't want you to. That suits me. Pallas Athene, make this a private record, key to me and to Chief Archivist Foot. Program running, Mr. Chairman. Galahad lifted his eyebrows, left abruptly. Chief Archivist, is the situation in New Rome becoming critical? I answered carefully. Mr. Chairman, in my opinion, it is, although I'm no more than a dilettante in social dynamics, but I did not come here to deliver a silly message from Madam Chairman Pro Tem. I came here hoping to talk with you about it. Lazarus looked at me long and thoughtfully, and I caught a glimpse of part of what makes him unique. He has the quality of giving full attention to whatever he does, be it a matter of life or death, or something as trivial as dancing to amuse a guest. I recognized it because Tamra has the same quality. She displays it by giving total attention to the person she is with. She does not have exceptional beauty, nor, I suppose, is she more skillful in technique than any of several other professionals, or even some amateurs. No matter. It is this quality of total concentration that sets her apart from other fine women of her merciful calling. I think the senior extends it to everything. Now he had suddenly picked up the gavel, and his computer knew it at once, and Galahad spotted it almost as quickly. And I stopped worrying. I never assumed, he said, that the family's chief of records would play messenger with a useless message. So tell me your reason. Elaborate it? No. Explanations could follow. Mr. Chairman, the archives should be replicated off Secundus. I came here to see if it could be done on Tertius. Go on. I've never seen civil disorder. I'm not sure of the symptoms, nor how long it takes them to grow into open violence. But the people of Secundus aren't used to arbitrary laws and rules that change overnight. I think there will be trouble. I would feel that I had carried out the duties of my office if I ensured that destruction of the archives could not mean that our records are lost. The vaults are underground, but not invulnerable. I have figured out 11 ways that some or all of the archives could be destroyed.
If there are 11 ways, then there is a 12th, and a 13th, and so on. Have you discussed this with anyone?
No! I added, more quietly. I didn't want to put ideas into anyone's head.
Sound. Sometimes...